to where we were in Bombtown. I decided to go back a couple of verses from where we were a couple of weeks ago and just review one point which came up yesterday. Well, what is the goal? And knowing what is the goal. So I thought I'd just back up a couple of verses, read that, read something here in the talks of Ramananda and Mahaprabhu. So backing up a few verses, to verse 5, Muniya sarupristoham bhavadbhir lokamangalam yakkita krishna samprasno yenatma sukhasijati. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahaituki apratyata yena masupasiddhati. The supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which men and women can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita janayati asuvairagyam jnanam chayarahoitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires, causes knowledge and detachment from the world. Dharma svanustitapam samvishvatsena katasuya nukpadayad yadiratim srama eva hikevalam. The occupational duties a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction to the message of the personality of Godhead. Dharma shahi apavargasya narato artayo akalpate naratasya dharmaikantasya kanamo labhaya hi smitaha. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Karmasya nindriya prati navo jiveta yavata jivasya tatva jignasa narutoyascha karma bihi. Life's desires should never be directed toward sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human life is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Varanti tattattvavedas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabjite. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Tachsradhadanamunayo jnanavairagyaryuktaya pashyanti atmani chatmanam bhaktya sruta grihetaya. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes the absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. And the same continues, the same focus. So the goal of life, the goal of human life, which we mentioned yesterday, our day before, that is to know the absolute truth. What is the truth? To be able to distinguish truth from an untruth, truth from distortion. What is the absolute truth? That is the supreme goal of life. That is a big subject, just as this is a big country. Giri Maharaj was saying something about the American accent yesterday, and I asked him, which accent? There are so many American accents. But having not gone very far in this country, he has not encountered the Georgia accent, the Alabama accent, the Texas accent, the New Yorker's accent. There's so many accents in this country. It is a big country. So the absolute truth is a big topic, much bigger than this country. But generally it is said there are three departments or three divisions, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. You hear a lot of from the general people about Brahman, Brahmajyoti. They have heard that truth is light. Ignorance is darkness. And truth dispels ignorance. Truth is light. And they have a conception that, truth is a very brilliant light, an effulgent transcendental light, and that realizing truth means to be absorbed into that light. They are not fully correct, and they are not fully wrong either. Krishna has an effulgent light that is called Brahmajyoti that emanates from his transcendental body. That light is all-knowing. That light is truth. That light indeed does dispel darkness, Brahmajyoti. That is known as Krishna's impersonal aspect. Then, more concentrated, the next or more elevated stage of truth above light consciousness is Paramatma. Paramatma means the super soul who is situated in the hearts of all living beings, who is situated in every atom, and who is situated in between every atom, and who never leaves the side of a living entity in this material world, regardless, in any condition, in any number of lifetimes, in any place in this universe. The super soul accompanies the living entity by his side and situated within his heart. There's a small controversy going on in the Vaishnava world, very, very small. It's hard to just find it, but it's out there. Some people say the super soul is situated in your heart. That means your heart, blood heart. And others are saying, some are saying the soul, super soul is situated in your heart as two birds are sitting in a tree. So your soul, Atma, is situated in the region of your heart, blood heart. And the super soul is sitting right next to him like two birds in a tree, the tree being the heart, and the two birds being the soul and the super soul. Then there is another section which says that, well, that is more or less allegorical. Actually, the super soul is situated in the heart of the soul. He is in your heart. The second is true, actually. The first one has somehow misunderstood some Upanishad verses and some descriptions from Bhagavatam, somehow is misunderstood. The super soul, the smallest particle in this world is the soul, smaller than the atom. And Krishna is smaller than the smallest and enters the heart of the smallest. So that means that he is situated in the heart of the soul. What do we mean when we say heart? What is the heartland of America? Well, it's out there in Idaho and all that Midwestern. Well, if you go there, does it look like a big heart? No, it means the heart. In English, the heartland means, you know, down in the breadbasket. Another thing, that's another allegory, the breadbasket. So when you go there, does it look like a breadbasket? No, it means the essence of the land, the essence of the people, the essence of the culture. So the heart of the soul. The soul doesn't have a heart, per se, as we know, a biological heart. But it means the very essence of the existence of the soul, the super soul, is there within. So, the super soul, as Brahman realization may be achieved through external process of meditation and elimination of what is matter, what is spirit. It's called niti, 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 not this, not this, not this, not this. You eliminate what it's not and ultimately arrive at what it is. But this is a self-assertive process, and it only reaches up so far. Then more achievement in that world, and quite a bit of the process is described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other places. One may have the opportunity to see in meditation the Lord situated in his heart, in the form of the super soul. And it is said that the yogi, in perfect realization of the super soul, he sees the Lord in his heart, and he appears to be about the size of the Lord, of your thumb. Thumb-sized Lord within the heart. Very few of these yogis understand who that super soul is. The 99.9% of them, almost 100% of them, think that that super soul is themselves. And they misidentify their self with the supreme self. Just like the light mergers. They consider that light to be the supreme self, and they become lost in that light. Just like we are lost in light when a powerful light is put in our face. Our own personal existence gets lost in that light. We can't even see our face. We can't even see ourselves if light is so bright. You see? They become confused. From our point of view, confused. They have become the light. And confused when seeing the super soul, they think that they are seeing their self. So the destination of both the Brahman-realized yogis and the Paramatman-realized yogis at the end of this life, when they give up this body in this life, both go to Brahma-jyoti. They enter into Brahma-jyoti, even the Paramatman-realized yogi. Although the Paramatma descends from Vaikuntha, ultimately, the form of the Lord, is found first in Vaikuntha and then upwards in other spiritual realms, by realizing that form of the Lord, but by misidentification of that form, that is their very self, you see, slight misunderstanding there, they then do not enter into any service inquiries. And without service, you cannot enter the spiritual world. So here becomes an interesting point. What is the goal of life? The goal of life is to realize the truth, the absolute truth, and to be engaged in service of that truth. Service and truth are the first two goals which we should approach. In the top realm of the spiritual world, rasa is present. But you cannot jump from the valley to the top of the mountain. You have to hike every inch of the way, not eliminating any step along the way, or you may fall down, or you may end up in another place. So the first goal of human life is to know what is the truth. And then entering into the truth to seek service of the truth. Service is what qualifies us to enter into the spiritual world. It is a foundation of attaining real qualification. Now, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has summed up the whole elaborate process in one verse. Prema Pumartha Maham. He says, the ultimate goal of human life is to develop love of Krishna, love of God. Prema. Prema Pumartha Maham. This is the ultimate goal. So, indeed, this is the ultimate goal of truth. This is the ultimate goal of service. And this is the ultimate goal in rasa also. In the highest world where devotees are serving Krishna, they may even be looking like they're enjoying with Krishna. Krishna is enjoyer, and they may look like they're enjoying. But those who are expert in the science of love have told us, oh, they're not enjoying anything. They have no desire to enjoy whatsoever. Their only desire is to please Krishna. If someone offers you something to eat and your belly is full, you say, no, thank you. But actually, if your guru offers you something to eat, even your belly is full, you should accept it. What would you do if you had just eaten and Krishna offered you something to eat? Would you reject it? Or you think, well, this is the chance of all chances, and you take it. But really, why you would take from Krishna, and why you would take from your guru, or why you would take from anybody, when you go to someone's house and they offer you a piece of pie, and you say, well, no, I've already eaten, then they persist, but it's only a small piece. Have just a small piece. And then you relent. Oh, okay, but just a small piece. After you're full, then the host is going to say, okay, they're full. But the host is saying, we want to serve you, and we'll be very happy if you accept some of this pot. We will be very pleased if you accept some of this pot. So then we say, okay, I'll have a small piece to please you. So to please Krishna, Krishna's devotees perform many pastimes and sometimes appear to be enjoying. Why is Madhu Mangal, one of the cowherd boys, he loves sweets, it is said. And he begs sweets from Krishna, and he can eat more sweets than everybody and anybody else put together, more or less, particularly laddus. But is he an enjoyer in the spiritual world? He's one of the ones that they couldn't throw out or something? He's just a big enjoyer there, and he's doing everything to satisfy his senses? Not at all. Actually, he's doing everything to satisfy Krishna. He's begging sweets. He's giving blessings. He may even be stealing sweets from others. He has every trick up his sleeve imaginable to get more sweets and eat sweets. And ultimately, Krishna laughs to see him so eager to eat sweets at any cost, at any means, say anything, do anything, get sweets, eat sweets, and Krishna enjoys seeing that behavior. There is no... to enjoy means separate something, separate from Krishna, to enjoy. And in the spiritual world, no one is separate from Krishna. No one has separate interests. And enjoyment couldn't happen there even if it wanted to. Because enjoyment is not what it looks like. Like I was saying the other day, I wash a window, you know, Mr. Kramer washes a window. Looks like the same thing, you see. But it's not. I'm washing for Krishna, he's washing for himself. I am doing for Krishna, no separate interest. This whole thing is separate interest. The real issue is separate interest, not the thing in front that may be being done or in front of us. Once I got a real good example in India. It was the hot season, and we were speaking with some young man from Delhi, a devotee family. And speaking very long with him in the park at the inside the Red Fort in Delhi. And there's big parks inside. And it was summer season. It was May. It was in the shade. It was 115, 118 degrees, dry heat. So after about an hour of talking, I mean, my mouth was like cotton balls. And I just had to get something to drink. Well, the only thing was, I wasn't going to drink the Delhi municipal water. Might have been my last drink. So, what do you do out there? You go for the sodas. That's potentially better than the tap water. So there was another devotee with me. I said, let's go get something to drink. So we walk over to this Limca stand, and I told him, I want two. And then I told him, well, whatever you like, get something to drink, right? So this boy got a very strange look in his face, and he drank something, but he maintained this strange like look in his face for about 15 minutes, and when we went back to sit down under the tree, then he said, Swami, why are you enjoying the limca? And I thought, you call this enjoyment? I was just getting something to drink. But I noticed, I just drank the thing to quench my thirst. And he sipped away on it, you see. So in his world, that's a big thing. Him and a couple of his friends go down, and each one of them buys an 8-rupee limca at the time and sits around and sips on it for a half hour. That's called teenage enjoyment in Delhi, you see. Oh, this was an enjoyment for me. You know, I just drank it because I was thirsty, you see. So, but he was enjoying his soda, and I was simply drinking mine. And I've noticed that even in the West, it's best when getting new devotees in an ashram. It's not good to, you know, stop the car on the way and get them some soda and things like this, because the fine line internally in the consciousness between I'm enjoying and I'm just quenching my thirst even is a very fine line. Because materialistic culture trains us to enjoy everything. One person even said, I'm so fallen, I enjoy passing a stool. And actually, in Western culture, yeah, there are even sayings about that. Enjoying a good movement. And they have the magazine rack, and they have sound systems in the bathrooms, and all kinds of things, an enjoyable place. Yeah, in spiritual culture, get in, get out. It's not a pleasant place, you see. But they have even taken enjoyment to enjoy even the most fundamental bodily function in this way. Enjoyment, enjoyment. Enjoyment is the disease. Just like I mentioned the other day, the one young man told Srila Sridhar, well, I didn't get married, I didn't want to get involved, I didn't want to get bogged down, or, be attached. I forget exactly how he expressed it. Then Srila Sridhar was told him, wrong answer. Wrong answer. All indicative of irresponsibility. Not the right answer. The right answer is, actually, I just want to give all of my service to Guru and Krishna. I don't want to spend any time in any other plane of service. Just there I want to serve. Then that's laudable, to remain a brahmacharya or to become a sannyasi. But just to avoid the responsibility of family life is no sufficient reason. Although only those who are duly responsible should actually take up family life still. That is not a good reason. Then he said, there is nothing wrong with women. What is wrong is the conception to exploit them that is within you. The wrong is in you. You see? It's not in them. The wrong is in you. So in many, many things, the wrong is in me. It's not in everybody else. There's a saying, smile and the world smiles with you. Frown and you frown alone. So, you know, it's quite simple. But, you know, the Vaishnava purport of that is that everything is within. There is no bad. There is no harm. All these things are within. An attitude. Like I said when I was out at Saranagati in one talk or something, I said, actually, the goal is just a feeling within the heart, to achieve a certain feeling within your heart. That's the goal of everything we do in Krishna consciousness, to awaken a particular feeling within the heart. Big elaborate temples, big extended programs, big video programs, world traveling, the whole, whatever it is, volumes of literature, it's just to awaken a feeling in the heart. Mahaprabhu says that is prema. That is the highest goal, the highest achievement. So, to approach the highest goal of life, we should try to control those things which are against our better interests. And that, in a word, or in two words, is called sense gratification, material enjoyment. We should not cultivate that. We may have to accept that. To a certain level, we do. But we do not cultivate that independent of Krishna. Rather, we dovetail that necessity in relation to Krishna. We eat, drink, and make merry under the guardian shelter of the Supreme Lord. We eat and drink that which is prasad and mahaprasad. And we make merry in the association of devotees, by chanting, dancing, having festivals, worshipping the deities, and all these types of things. Our system is so superior to make merry than anybody has got out there in the material world. And we used to point this out, that we were just up every day dancing and singing at 4:30 in the morning. Here it's later because of certain necessities. But nobody, after Friday night, is up on Sunday morning dancing by 7:30. Nobody. They're just moaning and groaning, putting their head under the pillow, complaining of their headache, bellyache, all sorts of things. Nobody has the party spirit like we do, like the devotees do. Every day they are up for a dance and singing and singing and singing. And the songs we sing have remained at the top of the pops from beginning to end. We're not dissatisfied with this thing and then go to another one and another song and then another song. We've got the supreme song. And you can sing any song, however good it is. My Sweet Lord or whatever. You'll get tired of it after a while. Any kind of song you've become tired of. Even bhajans, if you don't know the meaning, you sometimes may tire of the bhajan. Maha Mantra is quite different than that. Absolute sound which puts us directly in touch with Krishna. So it's not a song of this world. It's a transcendental vibration. So these the materialists, they cannot sustain that same interest in their enjoyment. However well they enjoy it, they become very frustrated with it very soon afterwards. In this explanation of the goal of life, we cultivate one thing, we try to keep away from some other thing. Within that, we come to this point that purity, we should seek purity. Certain things are contaminating. They're contaminating to our senses. They're contaminating to our consciousness. They are contaminating to our mind. We should try to avoid those things. And we should cultivate the pure life. When you cultivate that explanation, it comes to this point, we must become pure devotees of Krishna. We should not just be devotees of Krishna, but maintain all types of impurities. You see, that can be done. Just like you can show up to the community meeting wearing dirty clothes, you see, and not bath and emitting a bad fragrance, you see. And yeah, you can still show up there, you see. But you won't be welcome there. You won't be appreciated there. Nobody's wanting to embrace you. Oh, they want to go back from you. But you can show up there, you see. Or you can show up there very clean, properly dressed, well-behaved and everything, and everyone will welcome you there. So you can do devotional service, maintaining all types of impurities, but it is not pleasing to Krishna. He does not look forward to that service coming in his direction. He does not welcome that so wholeheartedly. So service, just like we like somebody, we want to give a gift to express our appreciation for that person. But sometimes, and it is purely given, no ulterior motive, but sometimes that person may misread, that person not being so pure, may misread our intentions, you see, and may think, oh, this is just being given to me because he has a plan to exploit me, you see. Some flattery is being given. Actually, he just wants my money. It's like dealing with students. Many times, a wise professor will not flatter and favor his favorite student. Favorite student he'll like because he or she is very enthused and doing well and studying hard. He may give flatter to a student of lower capacity because the student needs encouragement. But he may hesitate to flatter the better student because he doesn't want to put that student in jeopardy of becoming teacher's pet. You see, and then maybe the student will lose the edge of his or her focus. You see, so a wise professor will show his affection differently, and may not show great affection to someone who is actually, who is very, very dear, and who is doing very, very well. Or like in a reverse type of a situation, when Haridas Thakur went into the prison, everyone asked for his blessings, and he said, yes, we'll be here in this miserable place forever. They could not understand his blessings. But his point of view was, they've stopped all their nonsense, you see. They're not drinking and rowdy making every day. And they're standing here with folded hands in a submissive mood. So stay right where you are. It would be good for you, you see. But how can they read and understand his blessings, you see? People approach sadhus, "Oh, Swami, give you a blessing." But they don't know what blessings are. The famous story is there, and Prabhupada said, "You want my blessings?" "Yes, Swamiji." Then he pointed to Brahmananda, who was standing behind him, very big man, shaved head, big tilak, saffron and mudanda. He said, "This is my mercy." The man was shaking and moving away. He asked him, what is mercy? And the man asked, said, "Health and wealth and nice things for family, and that is a blessing." "No, no, this is my blessing." So a lot of people don't know what to give your blessing. When the blessing comes, they don't want that. That's not what they had in mind. After hearing many classes in Calcutta some years ago, then the supporting members of the community refused to chant japa. They would serve, they would give money, because they had caught this point that the holy name will destroy all your material desires. It will free you from material desires. So they misread that and said, "Well, we'll be happy to keep our material desires and just give some money to the temple." And when they couldn't find it, they said, "Well, we don't understand. You'll give money, you'll do service, you'll just do all these things, but you won't chant any Maha Mantra on beat." "Well, Swami, you know, you've caught the point." So they misunderstand everything, you see. So, it is hard to make progress. I think what Mother Dear Lalita was pointing at yesterday and saying, you have to know the goal, means if you're living with so many misunderstandings about the process, it's hard to make advancement. So you have to learn to discriminate what is pure, what is impure, what is pleasing to Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas, what is not pleasing. And we learn there's some trial and error there. In fact, there's a lot of error, and there's a good trial ahead. There's a lot of time, you see. One should not waste time and be a dullard about things. When mistakes are made, they should be corrected. But ultimately, one should try to learn how to please. Now, in a community of devotees, it becomes very practical. Okay, you have your guru. Well, Krishna is present for you in the form of the deity. Then, what happens in the beginning, we do something nicely just for our guru, and we stomp on everybody else's feet. Like the kirtan that dances around the guru shouting Jai Guru Dev and whacks the other guy with the kartals in the face and stomps all over people's toes and everything. There are such kirtans. They get so enthusiastic about the deity, about something, that they harm somebody else. There used to be this one devotee, when he would dance, he would put his hands out like this, and every day somebody would get it right in the face. Right? But it was so important that he would dance like this, and you couldn't get near him. You see, unless you want to walk up and give him an arm lock or something. So, learning to please doesn't mean just please your guru and just please the deity like that. Learning to please means Guru, Krishna, the Vaishnavas, and also the non-devotees. Not please them in the same way, but be so pleasing to them that they are attracted. They are charmed. It means very pleasing behavior. I think, you know, some of our neighbors here, Candace made several remarks about the girls who are living there, yourself and Priya and Adi Shakti. And he's charmed by their mature behavior. He's charmed by their activities. Previous tenant was, you know, wading through the beer bottles. And he's seen other girls of the similar age, and they're saying, "Well, if our kids could turn out as good as these kids, wow, that would be really, really great." Well, no need to get puffed up about that, but just to make practical examples, what's that mean? It means their activities, behaviors, it's pleasing. Even to the non-devotee. If you are a devotee, it will be pleasing to the non-devotee. The demons might not find your behavior pleasing. That's a different thing. We're not so concerned about the demons. But just those who are not devotees, but who are potential candidates, who are decent human beings, even they may have so many bad qualities at heart, they are decent human beings. They will be attracted. They will be pleased. You understand the difference in pleasing. You don't have to please their senses, you know, and satisfy and provide for them sense gratification. But you should act in such a way that they find that your association, your behavior is very pleasing. And then in that way, they also get attraction. There is also offense to those persons. If you offend a devotee, that is bad. If you offend Krishna, that is bad. If you offend Guru, that is bad. But you may also offend another living entity. Killing is especially not good. Even incense. I was very happy to see the first time Mother Leela Smarta's fly catcher. In India, it's brutal. I was very happy to see that. Just dispose of them outside. Catch them and throw them outside. You know, just don't squash them, you see. It's just an insignificant fly. But if you were the fly, you might think different from the moment when you were being squashed. You see. So, but ultimately, you cannot move without killing some living entities. You see. But you shouldn't go out of your way, particularly to kill living entities and cause harm to living entities. And, I don't know, there was a devotee once, and there was an animal that was hit on the road, and he just stopped and removed the animal to the bush in a natural surrounding. Nature will take its course and went on. Most people would just leave the animal half dead on the road, or their concept of mercy is hit it again. Hit it again. Put it out of its misery. But a devotee is just like, well, put it back in its natural surroundings and let nature take its course or something like that, or even maybe try to help the animal. Jed Barrett, he took that position, tried to help that poor animal. It was a baby deer, and the mother died, and everything like that. So that's the nature of a devotee. But then he fell in love with the deer, that cute little deer. He became attached to him like a deer would its mother or something. Misidentified. See, a little animal, if you separate it from its parents too early, it'll think you're the mother. You see. Subrahi Maharaj's cows, he told me many times, they think we're the parents. They think we're the mother or father because since their eyes were barely open, they were feeding them from a bottle, milk, and so forth. But then, of course, when the bull, I forget his name there, Dharma, grew up to become a bull, then he got his own mind about matters and was very tough to deal with. But for the first 2.5 to 3 years, that bull thought Trivoy Marsh was his mother. So, we have affection even for the animals, but we don't allow ourselves to fall in love with that animal. We should actually allow ourselves to fall in love with only one person, and that is Krishna. We may have affection for many, mother, father, brother, sister, wife, husband, all varieties, friends, but we should fall in love with Krishna exclusively. And that is the great art of living life in love of God. To be a devotee of Krishna and to live your life in love of God does not mean you become a nerd for the rest of society. You see, an unwanted, ineffective, non-desirable entity. Actually, those who actually do awaken love of Krishna, who are the great devotees, fully absorbed in love of Krishna, they are sought after in society like anything, real human society, like anything. Bhaktivinoda, of course, is a very classic example because he was situated in the world in terms of his position. He was not a renunciate. He didn't live in an ashram. He lived at home. He had a job. He was a court magistrate. Basically, he even administered the death penalty to a criminal, I think on 2 occasions. But if we study the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is fully absorbed in love of Krishna morning, noon, and night. To him, he was so desirable at a point in his life when he just wanted to be away from the worldly activities, And just live the most simple material existence with his family. He had some excuses why he was backing out from government. And so the government came forward and said, "Well, no, we'll build a train track right to your front door just to bring you to work." And they did. They put the train track. Of course, it was like if we lived up in the woods and the town council wanted us to come to every meeting so badly that they built the road right to our door, right? Well, the railroad was a great thing. So they built the railroad right to Bakugan Otakor's door. And if you go there, you step out his front door, you walk 10 feet, and there's a railroad track. Now, if they did that here, we would go out with placards and protest, take that train somewhere else, not out in front of my house. But it's relative. And that was a great, that was a modern thing, you know. Now, I'm a marvel. How do these people live on the road? You know, the houses right on the road and out 30 and all. But the fact is, when they first put those houses there, there wasn't any cars. And then when the cars came, they came so slow, there wasn't two a day. Now, the lights right through your house every time a car turns, the lights go through their living room. Even right at the end of our driveway down at the main road there. Every time a car turns in at night, the lights through the driveway. Oh, I would find that so irritating. Even here, this close to the road, especially in summer when your windows are open, everything goes up and down the road. I hear it. I can't wait to get into the forest. You see. But there was a time when being right next to the road, and still for many people, like in India, they want to be smack in the city, neighbors left, right, center, living in the basement, over your head, all around, people. I think that's very nice. And we think, oh, let's get out of here. Give me some room, you know. So it's relative. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so, everyone was so impressed with Bhaktivinoda Thakur that even the government didn't want to let go of him. Not because he's a good man, not because of all these things. Ultimately because of the real substance of the person. He was a great devotee of Krishna.